Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware for March 25th, 2010. Just get a hacksaw.
This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, go to audiblepodcasts.com/Twitch.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm your host, Brian Schrout, joined by Colleen as well at the Twit Cottage, running the board, taking us through, well, actually a couple of weeks worth of stories since we didn't have a show last week. Thanks in large part to lack of cell phone internet service in the middle of Florida, like right in the middle of it.
What's up with that? You didn't plan ahead?
I did plan ahead. I brought 3G cards, and I was told that the condo complex we were staying at had Wi-Fi. I couldn't find it, so it kind of left us out in the dark.
You need one of those t-shirts.
Yeah, a Wi-Fi detection t-shirt. That would be kind of cool.
I saw one on the Price is Right the other day.
Did you really? Were there any Wi-Fi signals at the Price is Right?
No.
It's disappointing. You know, the only place you could probably wear a shirt like that and not feel really out of place is like CES, maybe South by Southwest. That seems like to be that kind of crowd as well. I know I would never personally wear it here, especially in the state of Kentucky where nobody would know what that means. So, moving on. We did have a lot of stuff that happened last week, some stuff that we'll talk about this week. If you hear any background noise on our recording today, don't worry. Those are just the fans from the Fermi cards we are testing.
You have real live Fermi cards?
I actually have four of them.
Oh, snap. Here. Are you allowed to talk about them?
Not really. We can't talk about benchmarks or anything like that. We know a lot of information about them. The GTX 480, GTX 470, they're coming out on March 26th at PAX East. If you look at the schedule for PAX East, you'll be able to know the time that they're launching it, because that's when NVIDIA is they're starting to host an event on Friday night. So it's kind of an odd time for a product launch from my perspective as a reviewer, being that Friday night at a 7 p.m. Eastern or whatever it is not the normal time to be launching an article, launching a review of a brand new product. So it's a little bit interesting in that regards. But we've got a handful in-house. We are doing SLI testing for a little bit. They use a lot of power. They generate some heat. They're good performers. And we'll just have to see how the benchmark is here doing is somebody's testing it and running benchmarks. So we don't have all the answers yet. But we will know by the end of this week.
Have you considered, are we going to do like a head-to-head shootout of the different ones? Are we going to do an overview of it? Do you find that?
There's only two cards that are going to be launching. You know, they've already announced this as well, the GTX 480 and the GTX 470. And where I can't mention the prices, I can't mention the specs of them, but you know, you're going to have one high-end card and one little bit below that card. So we'll be comparing it to the current high-end NVIDIA offerings, the GTX 285 and probably the GTX 260 Plus. Those are probably the two higher-end single GPU graphics cards from NVIDIA. I'm sure we'll throw the GTX 295, which is their dual GPU card, in there as well. And then, of course, we'll take them against and pit them against the AMD Radeon 5000 series from the 5970, the 5870, the 5850. And that's probably as far as we'll go, because in terms of pricing, that's kind of where they'll fall in that range.
How about the feature set? I assume they're coming out with the Infinity competitor technology with these cards.
As far as I can tell, they're going to launch with support for NVIDIA Surround, which is the multiple monitor, I think it's up to three monitors on theirs. They showed that at CES. They showed 3D Vision Surround at GDC as well as CES. So 3D Vision Surround is when you have 320 hertz monitors hooked up to your system. It still will require two graphics cards. I don't think 3D Vision Surround will be a launch feature, but I would expect it within the next month.
Can you confirm if any of these cards have three or four monitor outputs, or if it's just...
They told us at CES that the cards would only have two outputs. They might have more than two, but they can only support two at one time. So you will have to have an SLI configuration to run NVIDIA Surround regardless.
But that's a change, because in the past, NVIDIA SLI was limited to two monitors at the same time.
Yes, and you could only actually run it on one monitor when you're actually doing gaming.
Right, but you could run it. You could run a dual monitor system without having to turn off SLI when not gaming.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. You could have two monitors hooked up. Yes, so yes, you're right. That is a change. You will be able to support three. I don't know if we'll be able to support four displays. I would see if they're going to move to three, why they wouldn't move to four as well, two to each card in an SLI configuration. Yeah.
I mean, my workaround for my home system is I want to be able to use three displays, and I want to be able to game on the center one, and I want them to not have to turn on and off SLI. So what I do is I have two cards in SLI for the middle display, and a third card that powers the two side monitors that is not in the SLI configuration but runs physics.
I don't know if you'll be. I'm not far enough into the review to know if that's.
Oh no, that's not a question. I'm just
accurate to do. Oh, okay.
Explaining they'll make it simpler.
At this point, you'll be able to game across all three monitors, right? In theory, if you want to do that. If you don't, then you obviously will be able to go to just one monitor. So we'll see. More on that later in this week, and of course, we'll talk about the review and all the information and product specs and performance and all that kind of good stuff on next week's Twitch as well. So that's kind of what's cooking in the background here. Not literally. I didn't mean cooking literally. I don't want to jump out of turn there.
You can't comment on that yet.
We can't comment on it if anything is cooking. If you know breakfast is baking on the cards or anything like that, we'll have to wait until next week.
I can do that on my MacBook Pro.
Yeah, I feel like that a lot of times on my laptop too. Now, the only observation I'll say is on the GTX 480, when the system shuts down after having run benchmarks for a few hours, don't reach for the card right away. Especially don't reach for the heat pipes right away on it. So
Just saying.
Let's talk a little bit about AMD, though. I wanted to mention last week, 2 weeks ago, whichever it was, whenever GDC happened, the Game Developers Conference, AMD brought some media out. They brought some game journalists out. They wanted to talk about something they're calling the AMD Gamers Manifesto, which debate all you want on the validity of that type of naming, whether or not it's corny. The point is they wanted to... AMD gets a bad rap, I think, a lot of times for not supporting developers, not having as well-rounded or as enthusiastic of a developer program when compared to NVIDIA's. You think about what they had to do for the way it's meant to be played program, the different games that NVIDIA has pushed to get physics enabled in and pushed to have 3D vision support in and that kind of stuff. And a lot of people view ATI as the smaller of these two companies that have a much smaller driver team. They probably have a much smaller developer support team. And AMD wanted to come out and say, you know what, even if ours is smaller, they wouldn't exactly say, but they would say it's not how large the developer team is, it's how effective the developer team is.
It's
and
not
they,
the size that matters. It's how
it's
you
not
use
the size
it.
That matters, it's how you use it. Exactly. So they wanted to talk about Ifinity. They wanted to talk about their... push into open standards as opposed to the push into closed standards that NVIDIA is known to do. So we'll start with Ifinity support in that they brought several game developers here, the developers of Supreme Commander 2, which I can't remember if that's Gearbox or not. I'm not 100% sure. But Supreme Commander 2 and even the developers of Aliens vs. Predator, that would be Sega. At least as the publisher there. And they brought these guys on stage to talk about the benefits of Ifinity, how easy it was to implement, and how their experience was working with AMD. And this is important for gamers because if you're a PC gamer and you have an AMD card or you're looking at a Radeon 5800 card or a 5700 card, and one of the reasons is to get Ifinity support, you want to know that these developers, that AMD is working with these developers to get 100% ready support for iFinity in these upcoming games. So you're not wasting your money. You're not wasting your investment if you're going to buy three or, heaven forbid, even six displays. With Aliens vs. Predator, it's a first-person shooter. So the integration of that is probably best seen on a three-panel display. The developer that came up to speak with us said it took roughly 3 to 4 days of one engineer to really implement iFinity support in the game engine, so not very long. And then Supreme Commander 2 is actually probably a more interesting discussion because you can run that in a three-panel, you can run that in a six-panel. Because it is a real-time strategy game, it's not a first-person shooter, you don't... The issue of the bezels in your way, which I know is one of your big concerns for it, is not as drastic, is not as important. It's not as in your face, get in the way type of thing that you would see in a first person shooter. They said they actually had one engineer that got it working in day one, and then within about a week with that same single engineer got it to be where it was a perfected implementation. And I mean, there are more things that come up with getting iFinity to work on a game than just making sure the resolution spans all these images. Something that was kind of annoying for me actually playing a first person, or not a first person shooter, but a real time strategy game, is we were testing it on a 6-panel 3x2 configuration, which there's a picture of in that article me sitting in front of. And what would happen is when you bring up the options menu, the option menus are centered on your screen. Well, if you have a bezel-corrected iFinity configuration, bezel-corrected simply means that you run a configuration utility.
Stuff will get covered up.
The pixels actually appear to be behind the bezels. And that helps it helps to not break the illusion that you're watching one giant image. The AMD likes to say it's analogous to looking through a window with the... window panes with the crosses on it, or eventually you just look through it and you don't even see those. The problem was when you bring up the menu in this particular game, it comes up in the middle. If you have bezel correction on, those menu items will get hidden behind the bezel of that 6-panel display. Obviously, that's a problem. So your options are either to not play on iFinity configuration or remove bezel correction, which some people may not want to do. What a developer can do is recognize that you have more than one monitor connected and make sure that these things like menus, life bars, buttons, icons that you need to click on, things that the user needs to see, get snapped into a appropriate location. So the menu might go to the top center monitor or the top bottom monitor. It will make sure that things that are usually on the edge of a screen aren't overlapped in that bezel as well. So that's what they meant by going from day one implementation by simply stretching the resolution and making the game render to that higher resolution screen versus perfecting things about placements of icons, placements of user interface devices, and making sure that type of stuff is, where the game is kind of aware of the monitors and what it needs to do to properly implement that.
Right, which is something that I've advocated for in multi-monitor setups in the past with I want to do bezel correction like on the wallpapers and the interface, but if you stick a window behind it, mm-hmm. it kind of magnetically goes and kind of moves out of
yes.
the way, because I don't want everything to be distorted,
right,
but I don't want to lose things behind the pane.
However, so there's no solution to that really.
The computer should be aware enough to be able to do that. Now, I understand that it requires some
forethought. It just requires somebody
to think ahead. It requires extra software, and that software has to integrate with the software that's being developed on the platform, whether it's a video game or whether it's Windows or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's completely doable.
It is. It is. And so, you know, we'll have an article write up on. Actually, I'll go ahead and show this since we're talking about it. This card is the Radeon 5870 iFinity Edition graphics card.
It looks like a toaster. It's huge.
It's actually the same size as a standard 5870, same cooler design, same all that kind of
stuff.
Which
is also huge then.
Yes, which is also huge. But here's where it gets important. You can see here that it has 6 mini display port output connections on a single card. So the 6 monitors that we showed you earlier in that photo, 3x2 panels were all being powered by a single graphics card. And that's pretty impressive. Now, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and tell you I'm the biggest fan of DisplayPort connectivity.
You should be. Very soon it's going to be the standard. And when it is, that's awesome.
Right now, it's kind of we had some issues with DisplayLink connectivity that were fixed in drivers. You know, if you're running your kind of standard 19x10, 19x12 monitors, you don't have to worry about things like adapters. But you have to have a mini DisplayPort to DisplayPort adapter or a mini DisplayPort to DVI adapter, single link DVI. If you want to use a 30-inch display, you have to have mini DisplayPort to DisplayPort to powered dual link DVI adapter.
But if we lived in a world,
so there's complications.
If we lived in a world where everything was mini DisplayPort, it wouldn't be a problem.
That's correct.
It's not a technologies. It's not a problem for that technology.
Right. You can see here the card does require an 8-pin and a 6-pin PCIe power connector, whereas the standard 5870 only required 2 6-pin. And that is because this graphics card has 2 gigs of frame buffer on it as opposed to 1. And it takes a little bit more juice to power for six display outputs there. So we'll have performance numbers and all that kind of stuff from here too, because even if you're not using 6 displays, a lot of users might want the flexibility of adding them in later. Also, the ability to have, or the feature of having 2 gigs of frame buffer as opposed to just 1 is a little bit of a plus too. Plus, don't forget, we've got Crossfire connectors here. We'll be able to add more of those cards to it. So when we're talking about In my testing example, we were testing 5760 by 2180 was the resolution. And so that's a lot of, that's 12.4 million pixels pushing those at 60 frames a second. You're talking about a lot of pixel pushing power required.
And you remember this thing?
Yes, that is the Apple version of the DisplayPort to dual link DVI. And that actually does go from mini DisplayPort to dual link DVI, but it's a piece of garbage.
Don't buy it.
We say that because it causes a lot of distortion, a lot of noise, a lot of it just doesn't work very well.
I used them
when I needed to get it something working right away, but it was definitely not an image quality winner in my book.
I just see that as a public service announcement that whenever we're talking about hey, if you buy this card, you need to get an active adapter. Public service announcement. Not that one.
Not the Apple one.
Get the Dell one, not the Apple.
The Dell one, and actually the one they sell at Dell is not Dell branded at all. It's sitting over here, but I can't remember what brand it is.
Actually, the one I have is branded.
Is it? It's branded, but it's not Dell.
Right. So it's not like they made it.
Right. But it's the only other one I've seen for sale. And that's another knock I'll put on AMD here is that when we saw these, even when the cards that came out that only supported 3, you have to use a DisplayPort connection to use 3 displays. And the same thing applies here. If you have 2 dual-link DVI monitors, you can only use 2 of these, right? So you're still kind of limited there. But the AMD has not done a very good job of getting those adapters out so they're more visible. And they're still really, really hard to find if you don't know exactly what you're looking for. You can't buy them at Newegg that I know of still. They haven't done a good job promoting these types of adapters as they said they would. So hopefully they'll fix up on that. But the other, to finish up on the gamers manifesto, the other things they were pushing were open standards for physics, GPU accelerated physics, and open standards for stereoscopic 3D.
That's part of their manifesto, right?
Yes. So they're basically
awesome to me.
They wanted to push open standards, open industry standards, as opposed to what NVIDIA has done with PhysX and what NVIDIA has done with 3D vision. Now, it will quickly become a philosophical debate whether or not you think that they are doing the right thing with PhysX and 3D vision or not. I think most people would say, yes, we love open standards. We love the flexibility that they offer gamers. However, if you look at results, if we just look at in-game results, how many games do you know out there that are using any kind of open standard for physics acceleration? 0. How many games are out there that are promoting and pushing anything stereoscopic 3D except for 3D vision? And the answer is 0. Open standards are great if people are behind them and the technology works and people are pushing them. Right now, the unfortunate part is that NVIDIA's closed standards, just like we saw with CUDA versus OpenCL, CUDA came out before OpenCL was ready. Thus, there's a lot of build up. There was a lot of developer a support for CUDA. Now, that might translate over to OpenCL in another year, but in that interim time, AMD loses out, ATI loses out, because NVIDIA has, you know, a better GPGPU solution for their customers. And the same, I think, is said today for Open3D, OpenStereo 3D, and OpenPhysics. I want them to survive, or I want them to thrive. I want them to be successful. But if we look at it today, is there any evidence to show us that AMD has done anything with them? I mean, have you heard about bullet physics before, Colleen? Even you, somebody who is an enthusiast and that kind of stuff, and follows gaming and follows that kind of stuff. What do you know about bullet physics?
Nope, never.
Exactly. And we heard about it at, you know, last year's GDC.
The only physics stuff I can think of are Havoc and PhysX.
Havoc was purchased by Intel. Right. PhysX was purchased by NVIDIA. And AMD, it's noteworthy to say they're always going after the open standard. However, it's not always going to be the easy way or necessarily the correct way.
Oh, I disagree.
Long span of things.
I think it's a good play on their part, because if there's going to be a proprietary standard that does get used, it'll be NVIDIA's because of their market share for now. I think NVIDIA and ATI would both benefit from using open standards for this because developers would support it. And
correct.
I feel that if they did things like 3D multiple monitor support and better physics on computer games, we would be able to start to differentiate the difference between computer gaming and console gaming and try to draw people into the more expensive realm of computer gaming so they can sell more cards. Right now,
I agree.
All computer games are bad ports of console games.
A lot of times, unfortunately. A lot of times.
I can't tell you how disappointed I am by Bad Company 2. I can't even go prone in Bad Company 2 because they don't do that in consoles. So they're like, we don't need to program that into the game. You can't do 64 players anymore. It's only 32. It's a very, very console-oriented game that's just been ported to the
PC. Almost all of them out recently are. I mean, you look at what game is it? Is it Bioshock 2? Some recent game. You can't even get to the menu option. Is that maybe it's Modern Warfare 2. You can't even get to the menu options until after you start the game and kind of watch the little introductory prologue part. I believe that's Modern Warfare 2. You might know better than me on that, but
it sounds right. But I mean, Modern Warfare 2 is another example of a console-oriented game, which came from a PC legacy.
Yes.
And what I think NVIDIA and ATI should both be pushing is the ability to enhance your gaming experience by playing PC games that allow you to do more, that allow you to make a more powerful, more compelling setup at a greater cost. Then they'll sell you the cards, they'll sell you the technology for you to do that, for you to get really into it.
Yep.
But right now, there's no reason for me to build super powerful computers anymore because the games all look like crap because they're designed for four-year-old consoles.
Well, I think we have a... I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Metro 2033.
Yeah.
If you want a game that's going to push your system, that is it. We had dual GTX 480s running on it, and it is like this generation's Crysis. I think, unfortunately, is what it will become.
Well, and remember, Crysis was designed for the PC.
Yes, I believe this was too. It's got pretty advanced DX11 features in it. That noticeable image quality differences between DX9 and DX11. So that's one for the crowd to, if you're looking for a game that looks way better on the PC or can look way better on the PC than it does on the console, Metro 2033. Yeah, I said that right. Metro 2033 is definitely one of them. And from the little bit I've played of it so far and actually testing it and using it for benchmarks for the upcoming Fermi reviews, it's actually kind of an interesting game. It's not an open world game. It's kind of a, more of a directed shooter, kind of like Modern Warfare 2 is, right? Scripted parts and sections to it, but it looks damn impressive, and it's kind of interesting. Okay. So
let me just continue on with saying, damn you, Bad Company 2. It's just such a letdown. I'm not happy about it.
And the thing is, as far as your other points about if both companies supported this, more people would adopt it. I 100% agree with you. That's why I think standards are so important.
They both benefit from increasing the people that want to spend money on expensive computer hardware.
Agreed. But obviously, one of these companies' opinions is that they will benefit more if developers stick with their technologies and thus users stick with their hardware.
And they would if they didn't live in fantasy land. But developers are not going to stick with their technologies when it outcast at least 30% of the market.
Yep, I agree. I mean, it's a political debate that will go on for as long as these two companies exist. And we'll just kind of have to wait and see how it goes. Let's see. We already talked about our 6-panel configuration. I showed off the card there, so we'll jump ahead. I did want to mention briefly for all of our SSD enthusiasts that are out there, although Alan isn't on here, Intel did release a new version of their RAID driver, which is not very exciting, although it does add a lot of new performance changes and enhancements to the RAID rapid storage technology and Intel Matrix Storage, like the RAID, essentially drivers for Windows.
Does this work with the ICH10R?
Yes, it definitely does. It should work with, I think, let me see if it says here. I would guess anything from 7 on up. Basically, big UI enhancements as opposed to the old one. If you've noticed, if you knew what the other Matrix Storage
is, it's so confusing.
It's confusing. You've got tiny little text. It looks like it's built for giant kind of computers that have many, many, many RAID arrays going on when really most people only have one or two. I think what didn't happen before. No, okay. What was supposed to happen, what we were thinking would happen, was that this driver would enable trim support on rated SSDs. However, we got verification today, I think, that it is not the case, that it does not. And the reason we thought that is because apparently there was there's a string in the driver installer that says, quote, in RAID mode, passes trim to SSDs in RAID 0.1 and 0+1, RAID 5 not supported. Well, apparently that string was not supposed to be in there yet. So my guess is another update coming very soon will implement support for trim in rated SSDs, which is one of the kind of, I wouldn't say it's enough of a killer feature to keep people from moving to SSDs. But it did prevent me, for example, from using a pair of 160 gig X25 drives in a RAID 0 array to create one larger drive as opposed to an individual single 160.
This is exciting for me, for my Death Wish RAID.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I use an ICH10R with my 5 250 gig hard drives in RAID 0.
Yeah, that's
which no one else should ever do with mission critical data. This is just for my Steam games. I can re-download them at any time.
Yes. Or you could create a backup of them. Hey, you know, just a thought. Next on the list, I don't know if you saw this, Colleen, or how interesting you think it is to get a platform preview of Internet Explorer 9.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's so exciting. Internet Explorer 9 is it's a 3D accelerated web browser.
It is. I think this is the first one that'll have HTML5 support. But really, I think what's most interesting for us is the fact that it has multi-core support and GPU acceleration for that HTML5 content.
That's so exciting. I mean, we are seeing a transition of more and more programs being offloaded from being locally run and operated to the cloud.
Yes.
As we do that, we've kind of been getting really crappy interfaces. There's no reason, from a technical perspective, why you cannot make a compelling web-based interface that even though you load it and is kind of streamed to you, that you could render locally using your GPU and do really compelling stuff.
Oh, I agree.
And this is the answer to that. This is really, really exciting stuff for the future of compelling web applications.
Agreed. So they talk about, like I said, multi-core and GPU acceleration. The improvements obviously will be more noticeable on laptops and on netbooks and those types of things that don't have the necessary CPU power already. Right. So if the CPU is already more than powerful enough to handle HTML5 and all the alpha channel transparencies that are going on, all that kind of stuff, then you probably won't see a big difference. But they even mentioned in this article at Ars Technica that one of the Microsoft developers mentions that because the GPU tends to be more efficient in terms of performance per watt on a lot of these functions, that you might actually, IE9 might eventually be able to extend the battery life of laptops versus IE8 or, you know, Chrome or Firefox, depending on where they're at when this actually comes out. So that's kind of exciting to me. It's pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah. That's...
You know, I mean, we saw.
I can't tell you how excited I am for this. I mean, it's.
You already like the fact that Chrome will let you move to multiple. Let's see, what is that? Each tab has its own thread.
Each tab is its own process on the processor, which is really cool. But even then, what happens if I'm running, you know, a fully 3D accelerated online game? Say Quake Live, or you know, let's say I'm not doing game. Think about Google Earth using this. You could do Google Earth in a web browser, that kind of stuff. Really cool. So say you're doing Google Maps, Google Earth in your web browser, and it's in one tab. You're going to want that to be able to be multi-threaded.
Yep. You can actually users who are interested in our show notes. You can actually download this kind of. It's not even a beta. It's way less than a beta. They're calling it a platform preview. I don't think it has any kind of user interface. It doesn't really have tabs or anything like that. It's really just. It's meant to get out to developers and say, "Here's our rendering engine. Does it work?" That type of thing. So don't download it, install it, and think you're going to replace Firefox or Chrome or even your Internet Explorer 8. Thing like that.
But do have some really cool demonstrations where you know, you can run it on a traditional web browser and you can run it in Internet Explorer 9 and you can really see the difference.
Yeah. It's definitely worth taking a look at.
So. And I mean, even if you're not a huge IE fan for political reasons or for security reasons, I know that Google is working on a similar technology. I know Firefox is working on a similar technology. This is just a really cool... step forward in the way that the web is going to be delivered.
Exactly. It's a progression over GPU accelerated flash. You know, we that's been kind of like the talk of the web world and GPU accelerated standard computing for like the past year is flash acceleration on GPUs. And now we're going to see GPU acceleration on the whole browsing experience.
And this is a little bit of a nail in the coffin to things like OnLive. I mean, if we think about things a little bit more creatively, it would be theoretically possible for software to stream parts of a game to you, the relevant parts, to be rendered locally in your web browser, not stream anything that you're not using. You know, it's like, I'm not going to teleport from this part of the level to that part of the level or whatever, but you could still render it locally in the browser. Does that make sense? So I'm just saying there's lots of creative ways that you could start writing software that we're not currently thinking about because we don't have these capabilities.
Gotcha. No, I know that you're completely right. I mean, it's just not – now the browser is no longer the dumb viewer of the content. Now it can actually help compute
The browser is now a rendering window rather than – it's a layer of abstraction for internet application software development rather than – a series of static pages that you go from one to the next to look at text. It's gone from being Microsoft Word to Microsoft Windows.
That's scary. But good analysis. I do want to mention...
Thank you. Actually, I'll be expecting a grading report.
Okay. Yeah, send the quarterly report my way. I'll fill it out. It'll be good. Let's take a quick moment here to thank today's sponsor. That would be audible.com. The internet's leading provider of audiobooks. They have over 60,000 titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook just to absolutely free. Get to download it, keep it, no matter or not you you keep the service. All you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/twitch to get the free audiobook of your choice. Now, I'm actually in the middle of reading one, listening to one, however you want to phrase it, that I think it was recommended by Leo at one point in one of the other shows, talent is overrated. What really separates world-class performers from everybody else? Have you heard about this one? Was that on another show recently?
No, he may have mentioned it, but I don't know. Why don't you tell me about it?
It's basically the premise is there's no such thing as talent, and anybody can really achieve anything based on a practice and what I forget what they call it, but it's a very specific form of practice and concentration, all this kind of stuff. And unfortunately, the part that I'm getting to right now in the book is that this very specific type of practice is not fun at all, and that's why very few people ever actually take part in it and then become great at whatever it is they do. And the book's actually pretty good. They give you a lot of examples other than just sporting events, you know, Tiger Woods and that type of stuff, that it's very easy to see how practice can make perfect, but how it might apply to you at your job, in the field of business, and that kind of stuff. It's interesting for me as well. And so that is the Audible pick that I have for this week.
I should definitely listen to that. I mean, being in the same building and, you know, working with Leo and then once in a while getting on camera shows that I have no talent compared to him. So maybe if I do the show long enough with you, one day I too can be a fraction of his talent.
With enough deliberate practice, you can do anything. So that's going to be the pick of the week. You can get that book or any other book completely free. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/twitch, and we thank them for their support. There was another thing I had on the list here to talk about in terms of Eyefinity, and one of our frequent topics of discussion, whether it be positive or negative, Lucid's Hydra GPU scaling technology.
Poor Lucid.
Poor Lucid indeed.
At GDC. So good.
Now, to be fair, I sat down and had a meeting with them. They looked through our review. You know, they said, look, we obviously wanted you to like it more, but nothing that you said is unfair. We're working on we're working to fix it. They've got a lot of...
They graded your review of them?
Yeah, pretty much. But they did show off this demo at GDC. And this was interesting more from a educational standpoint. This is the Hydra technology accelerating an Eyefinity configuration through NVIDIA graphics cards. So you have a Radeon 5000 series. I think in this particular setup, they had a 5770. They had two monitors hooked up to it. They were using a two-monitor Eyefinity configuration, which is not the best example. They said the reason they didn't have the third monitor is because when they bought everything at the store there in California to set up the demo, they did not have the necessary DisplayPort adapters on hand at the store, which reiterates my point to AMD that I mentioned earlier. So,
well, hold on. What company was this and where are they located?
This is Lucid.
Which is located down in Santa Clara Mountain View or something like that, right?
Yes, but all the people that came over to this demonstration came from Israel. So they had to basically come over, buy the stuff, do the demo, and set it up that way.
The demo was in Israel?
No. I mean, they flew in to California that day, went out, bought the stuff.
In the Silicon Valley, there's like five Fry's, a Micro Center. I'm not buying it.
Maybe they were strapped on time. They only had two monitors set up because of cabling or whatever restrictions. They said it wasn't really limited by anything like that.
And on another distraction note, am I the only one who finds it really interesting that a lot of the Rockstar development teams are in Israel? I mean, that's where
Intel. That's where Intel
Live U. They do their stuff in Israel.
Do they? Yeah, but I don't know why, but it is interesting.
It's a country of only 7 million people, and that's a lot of development going on there. That's cool.
So what they had was they had this 5770 connected to two monitors. It was running an Eyefinity configuration, right? So they were gaming. I think they were showing Hawks gaming on it. And then they threw in a GTX 260 Plus, I believe, an NVIDIA graphics card, and showed acceleration in the performance of the game by introducing the NVIDIA card. I think if I look through my numbers here, so the Radeon 5770 only got about 74 frames per second. When they added in the GeForce GTX 260, it went up to 98 frames per second. So that's actually a pretty good scaling ratio of about 32% going from the single AMD card to the AMD card plus the NVIDIA card. And, you know, despite all the problems we have with the technology and how it just isn't as reliable as we need it to be yet before we can actually start recommending it to us, this is the perfect example of why I think, going back to open technologies, Lucid is one of the epitomes of open technologies, right? If you look at it from a theoretical, educational perspective, if you're looking at it just from an academic view, Lucid's technology, in theory, should allow you to get the best performance possible out of your graphics cards that you have in your house that you're buying, regardless if they're from AMD, regardless if they're from the same generation or a different generation of AMD, or if they're from AMD and NVIDIA. And this, basically, they set this up to demonstrate that, to basically continue to show people that, hey, maybe we didn't get this technology right the first time around. Our software still needs a lot of work, but we still see there being value in this.
We still love them. We want them to get it right.
We do. I mean, it's one of those things. I'm not going to lie to anybody and say that it works when it doesn't, but I want them to get it right. I want them to succeed.
And we know that this is really hard, and we're giving them credit.
Yeah.
We'll say, we'll give you your time.
That's true.
We'll give you your fair shot, because we know this is hard, and we really want this.
You and I will give them the fair shot. It's whether or not their investors and their customers will give them enough time.
Luckily, I'm neither.
Exactly. So, but I mean, we're talking about that six panel. NVIDIA's current crop of features for Fermi do not support six panel configurations. So you just buy this Radeon 5870 Infinity Edition card. It's got six panels. And then you buy a Fermi and plug it into the same system. And magic dust gets sprinkled on the system. And you make a
flawless
wish.
Experience with zero driver glitches.
Exactly. And this is what happens in the magical world that Colleen and I live in, or want to live in, rather, I guess.
Yeah, I am.
This world we actually live in is where that has problems, it has bugs, it only works on certain games, it only works in DX9 or DX10 modes in certain games, and, you know, there are other issues.
Give you a little checklist. Oh, I see you're trying to play Modern Warfare 2. Have Clippy kind of come up on the screen and be like, would you like to play with DX11? Would you like to play with Infinity? Would you like to play with... Well, then you can't have...
I agree. I it's one of those things. I just figured it would be cool to show and talk about. Now,
absolutely. I'm down.
Real quickly, OCZ released a new line of SSDs.
Yeah, they're hot.
32 gigabytes, under $100.
Oh, not those. Never mind.
No. These are a little bit slower. 125 megabyte per second reads, 70 megabyte per second writes. So slow in terms of overall SSD speeds, but that's,
and in terms of awesomeness,
that's pretty good for standard hard drives, actually, if you can get
zero seek time.
Right, but the benefit here is you get the zero seek time. Now, they're 32 gig models, and I think for $99. So if you're looking for that really basic low-end entry level, I want, you know, this could be good on a laptop that you don't use every day, that you don't store all your media in,
or a laptop that you use in a very vibration heavy environment and you don't want mm-hmm. any moving parts.
Yep. So this is the OCZ Onyx series. I think it will be available very soon if it isn't already. So under $100, if you're trying to get your SSD itch scratched and you don't feel like shelling out the big bucks, here's another option for you to look at. If you're not Alan Malventano, you don't have stacks and stacks of them sitting around, which I used to have stacks of them sitting around, then I sent them all to him, and now I got to tell you, I feel a little bit left out.
I think he plays cards with SSDs.
He shuffles them.
He kind of shuffles them and does the little bridge thing.
But the good news is because they're not spindle-based drives, you don't have to worry about shock of shuffling, right?
Right, exactly. What could go wrong?
Another last little note I thought was worth bringing up. Adobe CS5 software will be coming out on April the 12th, apparently. If anybody is into content creation, as we are here at PC Perspective and at Twitch, and I know you guys there, but you guys are kind of Mac-based. Not kind of, you are Mac-based.
Yeah, we're all Mac.
But one of the coolest things that you'll see with Adobe CS5 when it comes out is in Premiere CS5, and that is the implementation of something that Adobe calls the Mercury Playback Engine. I think we might have talked about this before, but it basically... If you do any kind of video editing and use HD video streams, high quality HD video streams, say the content we get off of a Canon 7D, you can really only work with one or two of those streams at a time because of the decode that's required of them for you to preview them in real time. And we've had problems even with a single stream from a 7D.
That's assuming hard drive speed.
System. No, well, this hard drive speed's not really the issue because we're talking about 20, at the most 20 megabytes per second, okay. Right? That's really, really high bit rate, you know, because most bit rates are measured in megabits. So it's really how fast can the CPU and the rendering engine decode all this video? Well, with the Mercury engine that comes in this, they're promising unlimited number of HD video streams working simultaneously. I'm sure it's not really truly unlimited, but in there, if you go to it's cs5launch.adobe.com. If you go there, there's a sneak peek videos. One of them is called Sneak Peek at the Adobe Mercury Playback Engine. And it's a good length, 20-minute video, kind of walks you through the benefits of it. And I think it shows 8 or 9 1080p DSLR type HD videos, kind of like all picture in picture around something, all playing back perfectly smooth.
Sweet.
And that is all done through GPU acceleration.
I figured that was Intel integrated graphics.
It's actually NVIDIA.
Long pause CUDA. From Skype glitch. Say that again.
Oh, actually, no. It's all powered by NVIDIA CUDA. So it's interesting in that I was having a conversation with some people about this today, and I was like, why didn't they choose OpenCL? OpenCL wasn't finalized, wasn't ratified when Adobe first started trying to implement GPU acceleration in this ingrained of a way into its software. CUDA was. Again, this kind of goes back to our discussion on open standards and waiting for things to catch up with you versus NVIDIA's stance of going out and pushing their own proprietary things. This is going to be a big win for them because while we talked about CUDA and GPU acceleration for transcoding in previous versions of Adobe CS4, this for Premiere CS5 will really be a game changer, I think. And it's only going to be supported on NVIDIA Quadro graphics cards and the GTX 285. So I'm glad to see they're adding support for consumer graphics cards.
That's really cool.
In this, but
the 285 and Fermi.
They assume Fermi, but they can't say for sure on release because that card wasn't ready when they were developing the software. That same type of thing
well,
that you
I'm
would expect.
Sure it will be.
But it's impressive to see. You know, I've heard lots of people talking about it inside NVIDIA. Obviously, they're pretty excited about it because it's going to be focused really on 4 NVIDIA cards. That this support will be built in there. It's bad news for AMD, their Fire GL team, anybody that has those cards, because it is built in CUDA, it's not compatible with AMD at all. It's not like OpenGL GPU acceleration or OpenCL GPU acceleration where it would work on both platforms, just maybe to differing degrees of performance. This is really going to be an NVIDIA only feature, at least upon initial release. So will we have to wait for CS6 to see the same type of acceleration in AMD side when they implement OpenCL? I think you'll have to. The only other option is if AMD were to write a CUDA compiler for their own cards, which I honestly don't imagine them doing. So that's pretty interesting if you're into content creation. If you're looking forward to buying more expensive software from Adobe,
and you know
you
we all
out.
Do.
Yeah, it's like an 18-month cycle or so. I feel like I just bought CS4. But yeah, there you go. That's pretty cool.
So I've got a comment that I want to throw in here.
Sure.
A warning. So
okay.
Remember two driver release before the current one, NVIDIA drivers cooked some GPUs by turning off the fans.
Mm-hmm.
They just came out with a newer set of drivers that are available, and they cooked my Windows install to the point where I had to do a system restore.
Do you know exactly how they did that? What did they do to you?
I don't know. All I know is that halfway through the driver install process, you know, my resolution went really low on all my screens, no matter how many times it froze, and no matter how many times I restarted, I couldn't get a start menu or control alt delete or anything. So.
That's not good because the shrinking of the resolution is normal when you install a new driver.
Well, yeah, temporarily.
But the locking up is not. So, but,
yeah.
Did you uninstall the previous one before you installed the new one?
No.
Yeah.
I'm going to try going through and doing all of the really careful you know,
use uninstall the driver,
turn off physics, remove the previous driver, turn down the resolution, reboot.
You download a piece of software called Driver Sweeper.
It doesn't
install. It's just an executable you run after you reboot the system. If you want
to
do that, I never use it unless I have a problem like you are having. So maybe you just install too many drivers, Colleen.
What are you talking about?
Maybe you just installed
my system is very simple, straightforward, and rudimentary.
All right. Let's move on to our Twitter questions. We can run through these pretty quick, I think. Let's see. You want to read this out or you want me to read them out?
I will read them out.
Okay. It's up to you.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
From Clint Hartson at Ryan Trout. Any tips on preventing a wireless router from overheating? This is the second one I've gone through in a year and a half.
You know, I had this, I haven't killed any routers this way, but I've had routers lock up essentially because of overheating. I have one of the new Linksys 802.11n routers that's kind of like, looks like a flat, it's like a flat saucer, doesn't have any antennas coming out of it, physical antennas. They're all internal. And that got so hot. It got, you know, physically hot to the touch. So what I did was I simply turned it sideways so it stands up. And air comes across the bottom of it, and the bottom of it is where it was getting the most hot. So preventing it from overheating, improve airflow. Don't set it on anything soft. I mean, I had mine sitting on top of a.
I'm going to veto you because those are all lame.
Okay, how would you cool it?
I would cut a hole in the top of the freaking router and install a fan. And I've done it before. Here's a picture, not of what I've done.
See, you can't really cut holes in the new routers. They're so thin and small that it would be really dangerous.
Pop open the plastic, put a fan on it.
Yeah, I mean, you could take it apart, leave it naked, exposed to the world, so to speak.
Hey, whoa.
And do it that way. Or just, you could probably just put a fan next to it or on it. But in my opinion, if it's really overheating to that point, maybe they should make these cases a little bit bigger or put their own damn fans inside of them.
I've got some switches here at the office that have fans in them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. When you're talking about high-end, server-class networking gear, they all have active cooling in
right.
them.
But what I'm saying is clearly you're having a problem. I don't know if he lives in a hot environment. I don't know if he's bearing it. Does he have a cat? A lot of time, cats sit on top of routers and laptops and kill them.
That's true.
If so, sell your cat. That'll probably reduce your router issues.
Save you some money.
But seriously, if you keep baking your routers, cool your router. Problem solved.
Agreed. Next is actually from the same guy, actually.
Also from Clint Hartson at Ryan Trout. Any suggestions for good low-profile cards that would give a PC a decent kick over integrated Intel G45, G43 graphics?
So pretty much any card would give you a good boost over those two integrated graphics systems. Half height, though, you're going to kind of be limited. I'm trying to remember, we saw the Radeon 5500 series. There was a half height card there. Which would probably be about as feature-rich and as advanced as you could ask for in a half-height card. You could probably get some GeForce 9600 GTs in half-height still, but I don't think you're going to be able to get any higher performing than that. But both, keep in mind, both of those options are going to be way better than G45 in terms of gaming quality.
Way better.
Video quality, all that kind of stuff. And you could probably get those. I know you can get the 5450 for like $69 or something like that. And you could probably get the 9600 GTs in low profile mode for about $80, if I were to guess, too.
And if the reason you're looking for low profile is because you have a case that only accepts low profile cards,
mm-hmm.
hacksaws do work, and you can put a full profile card in it. Nothing electrically stopping you. Just a friendly suggestion in case you...
You notice how my solutions to these questions are always like, you know...
Your solution was right this time.
And, you know, yours are always cut a hole in things and take a hacksaw to it.
Because they're something awesome about you. Solutions, dude. I'm letting you... Agreed. You give the obvious solution, and I figure that...
No, you're right. I think it's a good second perspective.
Yeah. I'm not saying my solution is right. I said in case you feel somehow limited by the fact that you were given a low-profile PC or something.
Agreed. All right. That's fine. I can go for that.
Okay, this one is from, although that is kind of funny, from Tav72 at Ryan Shroud. I have a 250, or sorry, a GTS 250, not a 250 GTS, 1 gig of RAM. Should I get another card to SLI? Wait till DX11 on NVIDIA. Or wait. These Twitter questions are oddly phrased.
A lot of times
so
they
he's
are.
Saying he has a GTS 250. Should he get another card or should he wait for DX11?
You know, it depends on what his budget is and what his goal is. If he's like right on the edge of being able to play some of the games he wants to play with his single GTS 250, then get a second one. You'll be able to find them relatively cheap right now, and you'll still have DX9 and DX10 support through all of that. I think you can find a GTS 250 for probably around $120, $150, somewhere in that $120, $150 range at least. You will not be able to buy any of the new DX11 options from NVIDIA for that price. Now, it sounds to me like he's staying with NVIDIA, he's not interested in the AMD options. Because you can get a Radeon 5770 or a 5850 that does support DX11, supports Ifinity, and that kind of stuff as well. If you're really kind of bent on getting DX11 support, but if you can spend $400, $300 to $400 for the lowest end NVIDIA option that's going to support DX11 out of the gate, then you can might as well wait until Friday and see, right? If not. If you're kind of limited to 200 or below, look how cheap you can find GTS 250s for, and
about $110.
Yeah, okay, so that's significantly less.
And they don't take that much power, and they're small cards. They're great.
Yeah,
I really like them. But
yeah,
you're with a Fermi card. I would bet money that you will get twice the performance that you will get from a single GTS 250.
Probably more than twice.
Right. And you will not get twice the performance of a GTS 250 with two GTS 250s in SLI.
Correct.
Just a thought.
That's true.
So you're going to have two big cards in your system sucking a lot of power.
I would also wager that two of the GTS 250s would use less power than one of the Fermis. I haven't tested it. Just a guess. I'm just saying.
Theoretically, I would propose that maybe. So someone in the chat room says, I wondered why everything I get from Fry's has hacksaw marks on it.
Now, yeah, now I know why they have a return rate and Colleen likes that store so much. All right, what's our last Twitter question of the day?
So our last Twitter question is at Ryan Shroud. Between 1366 and 1156, which I assume he's talking about sockets here, will be more future-proof. Any reasons to go with one that isn't the Core i7-980X system giveaway?
No, you read too far in
with
that.
The one? Yeah. Oh, I read the next line. Why am I reading? I can't read these Twitter things.
It's all right.
I give up on this. Okay.
So the question is,
which sockets were future-proof?
Yeah. This is actually a difficult question because
it depends on your budget.
Yeah. So the LGA 1366 socket will be around for a while. It's the same processor socket that exists for a lot of Xeon processors as well. So there will always be some newer desktop options for it. There will be many fewer upgrades to it in terms of quantity, but I don't know how much longer one will be than the other. It looks to me like the 1156 socket is going to last longer in terms of being able to keep adding different processors to the family. That being said, if you want to go for the highest end options, 1366 is the way to go. That seems to be where they're going to introduce the higher end technology first. Hence, the Core i7-980X 6-core 12-thread processor that came out last month, or earlier this month rather. It's only available on the original Bloomfield 1366 processor socket. Now, 1156, you still have a lot of options. You still have quad-core options, quad-core hyper-threaded options. The benefit to going with 1156 is you're going to have a much wider range of options, from the super low-cost processor to something in the $500 range that's going to be really, really, really fast. You know, you're going to get the top performance out of 1366, but I think you're going to get the best dynamic range, so to speak, of performance at 1156, and I think it will be around longer, if I had to guess. So there you go.
There you go. I don't disagree.
So yeah, that's our last Twitter question of the day, isn't it? So, and I guess I'll go ahead and read the next line that Colleen got to as well.
Yeah, I just kind of started combining it with the other question.
So
reading is hard.
We haven't had a giveaway in a while on This Week in Computer Hardware, and we haven't had a giveaway in a while at PC Perspective, which is the site that I come from. So we decided, courtesy of our friends at Intel and iBuyPower, to give away a complete Core i7-980X gaming rig. So all you have to do is...
With totally awesome Sabertooth Tiger Fire Monster on the side.
I prefer to think of it as like a Thundercat, like a Fire
Thundercat.
So this, if you go to pcper.com/contest, you can enter to win a system that consists of a Core i7-980X, 6-core Gulftown CPU, X58 motherboard, 6 gigs of DDR3, 1600 memory, comes with an 80 gig SSD, 1 terabyte hard drive, comes with a ASUS U3S6 USB 3.0 instead of 6G card, a Radeon 5870 graphics card, Blu-ray writer, that totally awesome flame-painted case that Colleen was pointing at, liquid cooling for the CPU. My guess is something similar to the Corsair unit in that regard, 1,000-watt power supply, Windows Vista Home Premium. Oh, I'm sorry, it's actually Windows 7. I don't know why I have Vista listed there. It's Windows 7 Home Premium. And all you have to do to enter this is there's 4 different ways you can enter. Make a forum post in a thread that is linked to from that page. Follow at PCPer on Twitter. Follow at Ryan Shroud on Twitter. And then retweet a post. So there's 4 ways you can enter. And we will make a selection for this contest on April 3rd. So yeah, I think it's I think the retail price on the system is about $3,000.
I totally wish I was eligible. That
yeah,
blows my system out of the water. Other than the silly brand name.
It's a hell of a system.
Can we put iBuyPower in there with Super Pipe and Seaweed?
iBuyPower?
iBuyPower.
At least that name makes sense, right? It's very literal what you are doing. I am purchasing a computer with high performance. iBuyPower. Again,
all of them are literal. It's a pipe and totally super at what it does.
URL again is pcper.com/contest. Pretty straightforward there. So that's going to
non-US residents can enter the competition.
Yes, that is a restriction we had to put in place for that, unfortunately.
All the details will be in the show notes, I assume.
Yes, we'll have all the details in the show notes, a link to the contest, a link to all the topics we've talked about. That'll be it for the show. If you want to find me, I am Ryan Shroud. Again, we talked about on Twitter, at Ryan Shroud, or you can find the work that I do in writing form and in video form, as well as a lot of other talented and intelligent editors and authors at pcper.com. That's where you can get all the information about the technology we're talking about here and stuff in a little bit more detail as well. And where can they find you at, Colleen?
Twitter.com/digitalkitty.
Digital Kitty. You're still trying to find at Colleen? Is that?
Well, I know where it is. It's twitter.com/Colleen. But I...
Is somebody using it?
Yeah, it's kind of. I mean, she's got her tweets locked down, so...
Yeah, oh well. It's worth a shot. See you next time on Twitch.